I think it's imperative on everyone working in development because the needs are so great. We all need to be thinking whether we are spending money not just well, but as effectively as we can.
Welcome to Vox Dev Talks, a series of interviews with leading policy practitioners and economists around the world. My name is Tim Phillips, and today I'm speaking to Rachel Glenister. Ever since her doctoral thesis, Rachel's been interested in the impact of institutions on development. Now, in her role as chief economist at the Department for International Development, the government department that's in charge of the UK's aid policy and spending, she can influence work to strengthen institutions that has the potential to create long-term change in developing countries. But when is it appropriate to intervene, and how do you evaluate when an intervention has been successful? Rachel, as the new chief economist at the department, what's your vision for the changes you intend to make?
So my expertise as a chief economist and someone who came from academia is thinking about evidence and what's the evidence about what's most effective in development. That's one of my pieces of expertise. And DFID's a very evidence-based department, but trying to make sure that what DFID does is based on rigorous evidence is a hard job, and one of the reasons I was brought in was to provide knowledge of what the latest evidence is. So one of the things that I've been doing is talking to different teams, policy teams, country teams, about what they're doing, what the evidence is in the areas where they're working, and working with them to try and incorporate that into what they do. So I guess my vision is to help make DFID a more effectively evidence-driven organization by helping them connect to the latest evidence. And sometimes that means I know it, and sometimes it means I can point them to people who would be very helpful. But it's all part of a general approach of trying to make us more effective by being more evidence-driven.
One of the projects on improving the quality of institutions that you've been involved with for a long time now has been to create political debates in Sierra Leone. What's behind this?
As with really any innovation, it has many different sources. It comes from the combination of lots of different places. One of them was some work that was done by colleagues of mine when I was at MIT and at Harvard, who were looking at improving elections in India. And they found that providing additional information to the population about the different candidates led people to change who they voted for and allow them to be more effective in choosing candidates because they knew more about them. I was working in Sierra Leone and I knew that people there didn't have much information about the candidates that they were voting for. But you didn't have the kind of access to information that India had. India had a Freedom of Information Act. You could petition for that information and then feed that back to the population. So we had many discussions with civil society in Sierra Leone about what information did they have access to? What did they think the people there needed to know or wanted to know about their candidates for election? So given that you didn't have access to specific pieces of information, what you could do, what you can always do, is just put people up on a stand and get them to talk. So who exactly had that precise idea? I think it was, as all best inventions, it was lots of people in a room having lots of conversation, and it emerged as the way that you could get information to people without necessarily having a Freedom of Information Act and lots of documented information that could be revealed. People can always be asked questions.
What impact has this had?
Specifically, in that research, we found that having debates led to population knowing, voters knowing a lot more about who they were voting for. They knew who was more educated. They knew about how much money MPs got to spend in their constituency. Across a wide range of issues, they knew more about the politicians. But also, it changed how they voted. So Sierra Leone is one of these countries where there's a strong correlation between people's ethnicity or region and how they vote. And yet, even in that environment, providing more information changed how people voted. So that's narrowly the impact. More generally, that was done at the election 5 years ago, 6 years ago now. In the most recent election this year, we see a lot of organisations setting up debates within Sierra Leone. We also see a number of other countries across Africa looking to that experience in Sierra Leone and saying, oh, we could do debates too. So there's kind of the narrow impact of how did it change voting, and there's the wider impact of you got a lot more people thinking about debates and how to get information to people about who they were voting for.
Within Duffid, if you wanted to become involved in a project that had the potential to change a country's institutions, what kind of checks and balances are there?
First of all, I'd separate my role as being a researcher from, you know, my work here at DFID. But I think the general question of how do we help strengthen institutions is something that absolutely DFID is concerned about. As ever, you don't go in, either as a researcher or as DFID, you don't go in and start telling people what to do. You start by having conversations about what needs to be done, you know, what would people like to change, and what's feasible to change, what would be useful to change, and then how can we help support you to do that? That's what good development looks like, helping diagnose the challenge, talking through with people on the ground, lots of different stakeholders, what the issues are, and then what's our comparative advantage? Where can we help? Where would you like us to help? Where people would like you to help and where you can help don't always match, but you're looking for the intersection of those things where both we're good at helping and they want us to help.
How do you measure the success of a project that sets out to strengthen institutions?
I mean, there's many ways that you can do that. I just had a conversation with the evaluation cadre just this morning about how do we measure whether a program is being effective, whether it's having impact. It's important to understand that not every program that DFID does can have an impact evaluation, and we can't always measure the exact impact of everything that we do. It's hard to do impact evaluation, it's hard to do it well, so we're not going to know precisely the impact of everything that we do at DFID, but we can measure whether we think we're taking the right steps. In other words, we can look at what's the theory of change for this program, what do we hope to influence, how do we think it's going to have an impact, and then try and measure steps along that chain. So sometimes we will measure, did we implement the program as we hoped? Is there good evidence from elsewhere that if we implemented it well, it will have impact, but we don't actually try and measure impact? And in other cases, we'll actually want to go all the way through to measuring impact. But it's important to say we can't always measure the impact of every program. Now, maybe your question is also just a more general one of how do we know whether an institution is being strengthened? That really depends on the individual institution, right? So you've got to think through, again, what is this institution trying to do? And then what are some indicators of success? And those are going to be different for different institutions. So one indicator of strength is people are participating in it. There's take up of their programs. People are looking up on their website or creating them. That's not a measure of impact, but it's a measure that people know about them and are taking them into account. This is the kind of thing you really have to take institution by institution and measure, come up with a measure of validity for each one. But there's absolutely ways that you can do that.
Changing a country's institutions can have a profound effect. So how do you answer critics who would say this is paternalistic?
I think that's about how you go about doing it. As I say, you don't come in and say, this is what you're going to do. You work with local partners to figure out what support they need, what would be a useful reform, where's something that the UK has a comparative advantage in. Let's talk about some concrete examples. I've just come back from Sierra Leone. One of the institutions they're working hard to strengthen is their National Revenue Authority, and they want to strengthen their ability to collect revenues consistently, fairly, transparently. That's their objective. It's very important to them. We have some expertise in how to help them do that. They're requesting that expertise. It's up to them whether they take the advice that we give them. But I really think it's not hard to do this in a non-paternalistic way. And it's really about finding out what people want and what they need and where then we have a comparative advantage to help.
Another project that you've been involved with in Sierra Leone allocated grants to individual villages and then let them decide how to use them. How well did this bottom-up approach to reform work?
I was the evaluator. This was not my program. It was World Bank-funded Government of Sierra Leone program to provide grants to villages. We were asked if we would come and help evaluate it. Again, spend a long time making sure that we were evaluating it against the criteria that the Sierra Leoneans and the World Bank thought were the right criteria. It turns out, both in this project and other people have found similar things, that the programme was quite effective at building infrastructure. So you give communities small grants, they can build a lot of infrastructure with those grants, and we found most recently that that infrastructure persists and is still there 7 years later when we went back to look at it. The economic effects were positive, so there was more economic activity. What it was less successful in doing was changing the inclusive nature of decision-making in the villages. So these are communities that traditionally have very top-down decision-making process, where the village chief kind of makes all the decisions, maybe in consultation with the elders, not really in consultation with young people or women. And that was actually one of the reasons people think that Sierra Leone went to war, because young people felt that their voice wasn't being heard. So this was a big objective of the programme, was to help incorporate them into decision-making. It turns out that the CDD was not very effective at changing how decisions got made. So we didn't have much institutional change. But what people often forget when they read that negative side of the results is it actually provided important improvements in infrastructure in a post-war environment where it was very difficult to get things done. And yet those benefits persisted long afterwards. So it's a classic example of aid coming in a very difficult environment and leading to persistent positive economic effects.
As a large governmental organisation, how far can DFID devolve decision-making on how aid is spent to a local level?
I think how you incorporate local voice into programmes really depends on the programme and the country. Sometimes you're working with a very democratic country, and the way you make sure what you're doing is responsive to the local population is you work with the democratically elected government and use them as the voice of what people want. Sometimes a program will work even more to try and make sure that local voices are incorporated. So, you know, you're supporting an education system and you're trying to make sure that that education system reflects the needs and desires and of more local population. Sometimes that's not appropriate, or it doesn't work well. If you're trying to figure out, you know, how to improve the Ebola labs, you know, it's not appropriate to be doing participatory beneficial appraisal thing. You know, you just want a good quality lab, but you want to be nevertheless working with a democratically elected government to make sure that they want to continue the lab after you pull out, that it's providing the resources that they need. So the level that you go in depends a bit on the project. So the level at which you work and you get input from the local population depends a lot on the project that you're talking about. Again, when you're working on taxation, you're working with the tax authority, you want to help them be more open and transparent. That's the way to make sure that you get local input. But you don't want people deciding whether they should be able to pay their taxes or not.
At the Department for International Development, how much will the requirement to demonstrate effectiveness affect decision-making in the future?
I think it's imperative on everyone working in development because the needs are so great. We all need to be thinking whether we are spending money not just well, but as effectively as we can. But I don't think that's just about DFID, and it shouldn't be just because we're under pressure to demonstrate effectiveness. I think everyone working in the development industry needs to be thinking about this because, as I say, the need is great, the funding is small compared to the need. It's true of developing country governments, it's true of rich country governments. We all should be checking ourselves constantly to say, are we doing this as best as we can? Because lives are at stake.
Rachel Glenister, thank you.
Thanks very much. Great to have this conversation.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more podcasts from VoxDev, check out our website at voxdev.org.